WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Hello again, everybody. A few statistics to begin this hour. To put the gun law debate in context, the British newspaper The Guardian today says there are 6 guns per 100 people in the UK, 89 per 100 in the United States. An average of 87 Americans per day shot and killed, according to the Centers for Disease Control, quoted in the Daily Beast, 87 per day shot and killed in this country. That's more than 3 Newtown massacres every day. We just don't usually talk about it because the killings happen one at a time, and the shooters often know each other. Many are actually suicides, 87 a day. That's about 30,000 Americans a year dead from bullet wounds. Most of those are suicides, by the way. The stats that I saw seem to indicate a majority. Another 183 Americans a day are wounded by gunfire, 183 per day. Now, by global comparison, Latin America is more gun violent in general. El Salvador, Mexico, Colombia, Brazil all have higher death rates by gunfire, according to the Organization of American States, quoted on Wikipedia. So does South Africa. But that's whose company we're in. An American is 25 times more likely to die by gunfire than someone in the UK, to compare ourselves to that country. And we are 150 times more likely than someone in Japan or South Korea to die by gunfire. And against that backdrop, we return to the gun debate with Michael Moss, New York Times correspondent, who wrote in yesterday's article about assault weapons riling Newtown before the school shooting, and Adam Winkler, constitutional law professor at UCLA and author of the book Gunfight, The Battle Over the Right to Bear Arms in America. Adam and Michael, thanks for coming on today. Hello.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for having us.
Michael Moss, tell us about your article. I was really stunned when I read it to hear what was going on in the Newtown area before the school shooting last week.
You know, it's such a surprising town because, you know, when you go down Main Street, as my colleague Ray Rivera, who worked on the story, you know, noted, you know, you don't see a lot of, like, mud-crusted pickup trucks, you know, with gun racks on the back. And yet, many, if not most, people in the town hunt. I mean, they have a long-standing relationship with guns. But then when we got a hold of the police department complaint logs about gunfire, it was astonishing to see kind of what's been happening, you know, behind people's houses, near schools, in the woodsy areas of town. People are increasingly complaining that they were hearing rapid fire shooting going on, explosions that rattled the windows on their houses, and just gunfire in places where there shouldn't be any shooting going on. There was something like there were close to 60 complaints in just the first 7 months of this year, and that was more than double the complaints that the police department was receiving last year, and the police chief was pulling his hair out.
I'm just going to read the first 2 paragraphs of your article, because they were so striking. People in the rural, hilly areas around Newtown, Connecticut, are used to gunfire. In one woodsy stretch southeast of downtown, the Pequot Fish and Game Club and the Fairfield County Fish and Game Protective Association, where members can fish in ponds and hunt pheasant, lie within a mile of each other, and people who live nearby generally call them good neighbors. But in the last couple of years, residents began noticing loud, repeated gunfire and even explosions coming from new places. near a trailer park, by a boat launch, next to well-appointed houses. At 2:20 p.m. on one Wednesday last spring, multiple shots were reported in a wooded area on Cold Spring Road near South Main Street, right across the road from an elementary school. So it is part of the idea here, Michael, that people are moving from single-shot rifles, traditional hunting weapons, to these AR-15s, as was used at the school, and other semi-automatics and just kind of higher-grade explosives?
Yeah, that's exactly what we found. And not only that, but they're moving from, you know, the traditional, well-organized, safe target practice range to these unlicensed pop-up ranges that have sprung up around town, in part because the waiting lists at the traditional gun ranges are like 2 years long.
Oh, you mean these places are springing up that are unlicensed because you can't get in to
it? Well, that's what you hear from people who go to these unlicensed sort of impromptu places, which is, look, I'd rather shoot at the organized gun range, but the waiting list is 2 years long, and plus, you know, some of them frown on automatic weaponry and have rules and this and that, and I'd much rather just, you know, set up a range in the back of my house where my friends and other people can come and shoot.
So, Adam Winkler, on the weapons themselves, we hear these different terms, AR-15, Bushmaster, civilian version of an M16, all referring to the same weapon. What exactly is this weapon?
Well, this weapon is widely known as a quote-unquote assault weapon. I mean, it's basically a military-style rifle that was designed to be lightweight, to be able to carry into battle by a soldier with ease, and to do a lot of damage to people when they're hit by the bullets. They become very, very popular in the gun rights community. Gun enthusiasts love these weapons like the AR-15. Not only do they look really mean and military in style, but they're a very comfortable shoot. They are very accurate. They don't have a lot of recoil. And you can customize an AR-15 in so many ways, add your own little features to it that are easy to put on. People have said it's the iPhone of the gun enthusiast. So I'm not surprised that in Newtown and other places, more people are shooting these guns, and you're getting complaints about these guns being fired around town, because these have become the weapon of choice for the gun enthusiast.
So, listeners, anybody out there own an AR-15, a Bushmaster? Anybody own what you would call a civilian version of an M16? Anybody want to defend the AR-15? In fact, let's take a phone call right now from somebody who I think does. Tuvia in the Rockaways, thank you very much for calling in.
Good morning, Brian. I always listen to your show and have called in before. I want to make two points. First of all, the AR-15 and all those types of hunting weapons are very common in the U.S. Everybody uses them. They're available in New York State. They're available in New York City. And, you know, gun owners should not be relegated to typewriters and rotary dial phones, because we all have iPhones and iPads, and everything changes.
Well, explain the analogy more. What do you use something that can shoot? Well, what does it do? I'll back up and let you explain. What is it? How does it improve on the experience of older model weapons that you would say is analogous to an iPhone compared to a rotary phone?
Well, sure, because every weapon has a military background. If we were talking about bolt action rifles, they're based on the Springfield, the Mausers, and the Lee Enfields of World War I and World War II. And, you know, if we were in 1947 and somebody got shot in a mass shooting, people would be making the same argument.
But what does an ordinary citizen need one of those things for? Not to hunt deer, right?
Well, no, you can hunt deer, and a lot of people in the South who hunt wild hogs, which is, you know, a lot of have to do with hunting today. And people who just don't hunt, who believe in the Second Amendment, and it does have a paramilitary usage. And you know, having control against flash mobs and riots and all that, people who own guns need some kind of multiple-shot weapon, because the other weapons that are slow are obsolete, like the rotary phone and the and you know, and everything else, the typewriter. And
so to protect yourself against riots, this is why so many people, like millions of these guns have been, because millions of Americans living in rural Connecticut are afraid of riots?
Well, people living in rural or in the cities of Connecticut, they all have AR-type rifles. It's not about rural or city or urban. You know, if you walk around Newtown, which is a very wealthy and affluent neighborhood, right, you're going to find a lot of gun stores, and right, they're in business because people buy semi-automatic weapons. It's just, you know, this is the paradigm of the people who want to ban guns. This is their platform. They control the talking points. So people look it through that lens. And that's why we don't, we have, you know, this butt-heading clashes between gun owners and politicians who usually talk to people who don't know about guns.
Does it take extended capacity magazines? Yes, right?
It does, but extended capacity, you know, why would you limit gun ownership to a novelty that could shoot three bullets?
Why would anybody need to own an extended capacity magazine?
Well, why would anybody need to own guns, period?
Well, for all kinds of reasons. Self-defense in your home, hunting, self-defense on the street if you have a carry permit.
Well, and that was another point here that I wanted to make, that, you know, if nobody confronts Bloomberg on carrying licenses in New York City because they only belong to elites, millionaires and movie stars who have been through mental institution and drinking and alcohol problems carry concealed weapons in this city, and they're allowed to because they're given the right. You and I probably not given the right or anybody else, but that's another point that I would love the media to confront Bloomberg on in his face.
Tuvia, thank you very much. I really appreciate your call. And speaking of Bloomberg, the mayor is on fire about this right now. I want to play a 45-second exchange that he had on CBS yesterday with their evening news anchor, Scott Pelley.
So why is this your problem?
Why is the murder rate around the country? I'm an American. What's your question?
Why is this Mike Bloomberg's crusade?
I live in America, and I'm a human being. Aren't we supposed to? I don't know what your religion teaches you. Mine teaches you to take care of each other. And America, read the Constitution. We're all equal, and we're all Americans.
But what do you say to those who would make the argument that the guns are already out there?
Fine, let's get them off the streets.
That we've lost this war, that there are 3 million AR-15s
really
made in America, and they're already there.
Think of what you said. You want to go to, I'll give you a list tomorrow of the 34 families who's had somebody in their family killed tomorrow. Do it by the end of the day. You really want to call them up and say, oh, it's hopeless, we're just going to keep killing more and more people?
So we have Mayor Bloomberg on CBS, and Adam Winkler, author of the book Gunfight. We have Tuvia in the Rockaways, and this is the debate right now, huh?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, this is the debate. One thing, it seems to have changed, the debate, after the Newtown massacre, in a way that it didn't change after the Aurora massacre or after Gabrielle Giffords. I think seeing these 20 children mercilessly slaughtered is enough to make anyone sick and to reexamine their assumptions about guns, and we're starting to see that. We've seen some big pro-gun Democrats like Mark Warner of Virginia, who have A ratings by the NRA, come out and say, hey, look, this is a game changer. We need to start thinking more seriously about gun control and perhaps limiting access to high-capacity magazines or other more dangerous weapons. The high-capacity magazines are not needed for self-defense. That's the core purpose of the Second Amendment. And you don't need 33 rounds of ammunition to defend yourself against an intruder in your home.
Here's a gun owner, Bill, in Richfield, Connecticut. You're on WNYC. Hi, Bill. Thank you for calling. Bill, you there?
I'm here, yes. Can you hear me?
Hi. Sure can.
I enjoy your show. I'm an AR-15 owner. Was in the military 30 years, just retired this February. I bought the AR-15 to keep my skills up for the military. But I disagree with your former caller who said he needed it for the riots in the streets, because we haven't had a lot of those. He also mentioned they were used for hunting. If you're a hunter and you need a 30-round magazine to hit your target, maybe it's perhaps time for you guys to go get a little more training, because an AR-15, which is basically a civilianized M16, was designed as an assault weapon to kill people, which it does very effectively, as unfortunately we've discovered here in Fairfield County.
So why do you think so many people actually own them?
I think a lot of people own them because they're, quote, fun to shoot. And as was mentioned earlier on the show, They're like the in thing. They can be customized. So if you're a wannabe soldier who never actually served in the military, you can at least go out on the range and look like you're Rambo. And I honestly don't think that they're necessary. Like I said, I had one. I'd be more than happy to register my weapons. I don't believe the Second Amendment. I don't think the Supreme Court was correct in their interpretation of it. I think the Second Amendment basically says if you are in the militia, you have a right. But I'm talking about a government militia as opposed to, like, the Michigan militia or these other organizations. Mm-hmm. So I have absolutely no problem with registering my weapons. I don't think the big black helicopter is going to be coming down the street to take my weapons away.
Do you think that's why a lot of people own them? Because they're actually stockpiling just in the eventuality that they need to actually fight back against U.S. government forces who are becoming tyrannical?
I hate to say that, but I think a lot of people, that's the case. Both the government or, undesirable elements of society, that may be in the Rockaways, God forbid, so we have to fight them away. I honestly think a lot of these people believe that's going to happen, and I don't, and I think most Americans don't. And I agree that perhaps this is a game changer, this incident in Newtown, that maybe it's time to rethink these assault rifles.
Bill, thank you for your military service, and thank you for your call. And Michael Moss from The Times, did you find any of this kind of attitude in your reporting about the Newtown area? There's a shooting sports association, a national gun rights group, is that the right term for it, that's actually based in Newtown. And so when you were reporting around there, or maybe this was the wrong time for people to talk because you started doing your reporting after the school shooting, did you find that people were owning AR-15s for the kinds of reasons that we've been hearing?
No, absolutely. And I should back up and just sort of lay out what happened in Newtown over the summer. So the police chief had on the books a 1991 law that was written for hunting. Yet he was encountering situations increasingly where people were using automatic weapons to blow up, natural propane gas tanks for explosions. And again, sort of this increased use of automatic weapons. He wasn't trying to ban automatic weapons. He wasn't trying to impose anything but kind of the most modest controls on where they could be used, what times of day, 9 a.m. to 8 p.m., for example, not at all hours, and with some safety constraints. And this is the proposal that he and his majority Republican Police Commission Board brought to the City Ordinance Commission. And it's that point, it was that modest proposal that ran into this withering opposition from people in town who saw this as opening the door, to infringing their basic rights. It became a Second Amendment debate in the town, and overwhelmingly the people opposed to tightening, even this very modest tightening of the rule, shot it down, and the ordinance was not changed.
Let's take another call. Barrett at West Point. You're on WNYC. Hello, Barrett.
Yes, hi, Brian. Hi. I couldn't help but be intrigued by the previous caller's comments on the necessity for AR-15 usage in civilian kind of scenarios, perhaps hunting javelinas or warthogs or what have you. And having, as a serving captain in the U.S. Army and having served in Iraq and been living in austere environments where there is nothing but an M16 around, I can say that over there, my great fear was that a soldier might lose his cool, and as it did happen, take out violence on fellow soldiers, which, while I was there, one overpowered at another soldier and went into a mental health clinic and killed five officers, including some other personnel. And as I see it, this gun debate goes on. The ban on assault weapons from 2004, which was lifted, leads directly to these kinds of incidents. This young man had his own social problems, his own mental problems, and perhaps played, as they've insinuated, some of these video games that have desensitized. And when you walk in with an AR-15, the ease of use, and it is easy to use. I think it kind of lends itself to this kind of behavior. And while I don't want to overgeneralize, I'm sure that there are good AR-15 owners out there. I just can't see us making this case anymore. And I think this might be, as like Malcolm Gladwell says, the kind of tipping point in the debate. Yeah. And hopefully it will shift over.
Yeah, thank you very much. Adam Winkler and my guests are Michael Moss. Maybe you read his New York Times article yesterday on how the assault weapons proliferation was roiling Newtown even before the school shooting in yesterday's Times, as I say. And Adam Winkler is with us, law professor at UCLA and author of the book Gunfight, The Battle Over the Right to Bear Arms in America. Adam, even many people calling for a new assault weapons ban think the old assault weapons ban, which Congress and President Bush allowed to expire in 2004, was largely ineffective. Columbine happened during that, you know, all those other high school shootings in the 90s. Was the Bush master covered under that ban?
Yes, it was covered under the ban. Again, we've heard some conflicting reports of exactly, you know how this was undertaken. But nonetheless, the Bushmaster was part of that ban. You know, the 94 ban was not necessarily a particularly well-designed law. It confronted a central problem, which is that it wanted to restrict so-called assault weapons, but there's a lot of rifles out there that are semi-automatic, and indeed the majority of handguns out there that are semi-automatic, that Congress certainly did not have the political will to ban, so that they banned instead weapons that were semi-automatic and that had certain other superficial characteristics, like a folding buttstock or a little thing so you can put a bayonet onto your gun or a pistol grip in a certain place, and called that an assault weapon. But you manufacturers just got around the law by taking off the pistol grip, by taking off the bayonet lug, and selling the exact same weapon with the exact same lethality. So it's one of the problems with trying to regulate assault weapons is that we don't really have the political will to ban rifles or even to ban semi-automatics. So we end up having to take a small subset of those weapons, banning them, and then the law actually just isn't nearly as effective as it might otherwise be.
Let me get one more caller in here. Tim in Tribeca, you're on WNYC. Hi, Tim.
Hi, Brian. I'm a gun owner, and I'm a gun owner who believes it should be a little bit harder to get guns in this country. But I think this hysteria over the assault-type weapons is a huge mistake on two grounds. One, it takes the focus off the real issue, which is handguns, which cause the vast majority of violent deaths by gun. And two, you have no idea what cultural war will ensue if we go down this path. It's such a hot-button issue, and it's really seen as a cultural divide in ways that the coastal elites can't even imagine. And I really think that it's a mistake.
Well,
and,
Tim, thank you. And what about, Adam, the first part of his point, which is that we focus on these school shootings, and we have, you know, very anti-gun people who also have been writing in over the last couple of days to say, no, 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 you're getting this wrong. The whole media is getting this wrong. There's too much focus on these very rare mass shootings, but there are 30,000 gun deaths in the United States, almost all of them in individual circumstances. And so instead of focusing on the weapons with respect to the policy debate that are used in these rare but very horrific incidents, we should be focusing on the guns that are used death by death by death by death, 87 deaths a day.
I completely agree with that. I think that it's very difficult to prevent mass shootings. We've seen in places like Norway, where they have very strict gun control laws, mass shootings can still occur. And I also agree that we shouldn't be focusing so much on assault weapons per se. I do think that we should be focusing on what we can do to reduce that number. You said it earlier, a little more than 80 every single day who die from gunshot wounds. We can reduce that number by improving our background check system. We should have every single person who tries to buy a gun undertake a background check. That's not the law today. It should be the law tomorrow. We should improve mental health reporting data. Very few states provide comprehensive reporting to the federal background check system that we do have of mental health adjudications. There's no reason why 100% of those adjudications shouldn't be in that federal background check system. And if we do that, we can make it more difficult for someone who is feeling suicidal to go out and get a gun. We can make it more difficult for someone who's a criminal to go to a gun show, pick up a gun, and then commit their crimes. They're not going to stop criminal acts, as Mayor Bloomberg said in that quote you had earlier in that little piece. You know, you have speed limits even though people are going to speed. We need gun laws even though people are going to violate them and get their hands on guns.
And so last word to you, Michael Moss with the New York Times. And again, I recommend his article from yesterday's paper, In Town at Ease with Its Firearms, Tightening Gun Rules Was Resisted, all about how the AR-15s and other semi-automatic weapons were roiling Newtown, Connecticut, even before the school shooting. So what do you think changes now in Newtown? What would the scene be? What would the conversation be there a year ago, a year from now? Have you asked yourself this as the home of the Sandy Hook Elementary School massacre and of the Gun Industry Trade Association, the National Shooting Sports Foundation, which also has made Newtown its home?
You know, that's a great question, and I think Newtown's going to have to come back to this issue just again, narrowly dealing with their problem, which is kind of the uncontrolled use of handguns or assault weapons or what have you in situations that people find dangerous and disturbing. And, you know, I think one of the most compelling people I spoke to was Marianne Jacob. She was a library aide who's credited with heroics during the massacre. She, you know, saved the lives of numerous children by putting them into lockdown. She was none other than the Ordinance Committee chairman who oversaw this proposed gun ordinance issue over the summer and leading up actually through meetings in November with these tumultuous, raucous public hearings. And I spoke to her on Saturday, just a day after the massacre, and she was obviously deeply grieving. But you know, she had enough to sort of tell me that, look, you know, we weren't trying to change people's behavior here. You know, we're trying to accommodate a changing society. The town is growing. People are coming in who want to mountain bike on these trails and not just hunt. And we're trying to come up with a way that people can have their guns, but do it in a safe, controlled way. And I think that's what Newtown is going to have to be struggling with. Again, this dichotomy between longstanding affection for hunting and this new influx obsession, if you will, with automatics, explosives, you know, the sense that you have the right to shoot a gun anywhere, anytime that you want. And it'll be so instructional to see how Newtown comes to grips with this.
And they come and they come and they come. I heard a caller to a conservative talk station yesterday, adamant about gun rights, say he didn't even want an AR-15, but he bought one a few months ago because he thought that someday Obama might not allow him to. So there you go. Adam Winkler, author of Gunfight, The Battle Over the Right to Bear Arms in America. Michael Moss, New York Times correspondent. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. More progress in the fiscal cliff negotiations. This morning, we'll play a clip from a news conference by John Boehner just a short time ago and get the latest. Stay with us.